Okay, let's go ahead and get started this morning. We are in chapter 13, and as you saw in the last couple of chapters that we've done, we saw the last trumpet, the seventh trumpet be blown, and that starts a whole range of things that are happening. And now we're being introduced to these different people. Last week we were introduced to the woman and to the child and to the big red dragon. So last week we had these new players that are coming on the scene that we hadn't seen before, and we're going to continue to see that today. So last week we saw the dragon, and he's very intimately involved with the beast. Okay, so chapter 13. And he stood on the sand of the seashore, and I saw a beast coming out of the sea, having 10 horns and 7 heads, and on his horns were 10 diadems, and on his head were blasphemous names. I'll be surprised if we finish this chapter today. I really will, because it was a really detailed study. But just from here, we're gonna stop for just a second. Most of the things he's been witnessing, John has witnessed in his vision, have been, let me make sure this is going, it is, most of the things that he's seen have been up in heaven. Now we're back down on the earth again. And he's standing on the seashore. Now, you and I think about going to Destin, someplace like that, right? Seashore is a nice place. Seashore is not a good place to the Israelites. They only had one navy. And that one navy was when King Solomon was around. He didn't even staff it. He had the king of Tyre staff his navy. They don't like the sea. They don't like any part of it. It's tumultuous. It's indicative of turmoil and chaos and danger. And so he's sending out a symbol here that this beast is standing in a place on the seashore that shows danger. So that's what he's starting off with. Now,
hey, Larry, it says the dragon stood on the shore of the sea, and I saw a beast coming out of the land, which makes me think there's a dragon and a beast.
Right, because we just talked about the dragon.
Okay.
That's what I remember last week. We talked about the dragon, and just a minute ago I introduced that we were going to talk about the dragon and the beast. Just to give you a heads up, if you haven't looked at your chapter until just now, you should have asked me on the way over, but it's the first time she's read it, but you've got a dragon, then you've got a beast, and then I'm going to introduce you to another beast, okay? So, what do we see within, I'll go ahead and skip ahead, what do we see within the dragon, the beast, and the other beast? An unholy trinity. Dragon is Satan. Beast is Antichrist, which is who you're seeing here. And the third one is the, what do they call him? The prophet. Whatever. He's going to be the Holy Spirit. So you've got an unholy trinity. You got to remember, Satan doesn't create anything. Satan is an angel. But Satan can mimic. He can copy, which he does continuously. That's how he deceives us. I'm not going to get political. If I were a talk show host, what you do is, and I've mentioned this before in this class, is you say whatever you're going to say, and you put in there a couple of truths, but the other things are false. Well, you take them all as truths because you know these things to be true, so you assume those things to be true. That's a perfect way of deceiving people, and that's what Satan does continuously. He tells you a truth that you know is true, but then backfills it with a lie, and you assume that backfilled thing that you don't know anything about is true also. Mm-hmm. It's a way to be deceived. And this whole chapter, the whole thing about Satan coming in and all this is you're going to be deceived unless you know the real from the fake. People aren't going to be close enough to Jesus. They're not going to be close enough to God. They're not going to be reading their Bibles. They're not going to be studying. They're not going to be praying. They're not going to know the love of Jesus. And when they don't, they're going to be easily deceived by someone who appears to be, but is not. That's the real deception. It's not going to be, you're not going to see, oh, here comes the devil. He's got horns. He's ugly. He's got vicious teeth. No, everybody's going to be scared of that. This is going to be a lovely person. This is going to be somebody who's a real winner. He's very charismatic, and everybody loves him. And can't you see by the things he's doing, everything's great? And it's not. But you won't know that unless you know who the real is from the copycat. Okay, let's back to verse 1. I'm telling you, we're not getting through with this, but you know, we're going to give it a good shot. Go back to verse 3 in chapter 12. And another sign appeared in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns, and on the heads were 7 diadems.
What are they? Diadems.
Crowns.
Thank you.
You're welcome. 7 diadems. That's a song or something. That got diadems. Yeah. There you go. I knew. So the diadems. Now, in this one we see in chapter 13, verse 1, and I saw a beast coming up out of the sea, having 10 horns, the same, and 7 heads, and on his horns were 10 diadems. So the difference is, this one had the diadems on his, and the heads were 7 diadems, on the heads, and this one has the diadems on the horns. So they look fairly similar, right? But there's a little bit of difference in there. Why is there a difference between those two? Well, they're two different people, or two different creatures. But why the difference in the number of crowns?
One's from the sea, one's from the land.
No, because the one from the land is coming up in verse 11. But this was Satan himself. Okay, let me see if I can remember how this happens. Any creature with 7 heads would be hard to kill, because if you wounded one head, 6 still remain in biblical imagery. Horns express strength and power. A bull with 2 horns is a powerful creature, but a beast with 10 horns has that much more power. Just like the dragon of Revelation. The likeness to Satan is just one of the things that identifies the beast with the one popularly known as the Antichrist. Now, this is probably, if you only get one thing out of this class today, I want you to get this out of this class. The word Antichrist only appears in the Bible 5 times in 4 verses, and they're all in John. Okay, 1 John and 2 John. It is a good example. Little children, in the last hours, as you have heard that the Antichrist is coming, with this John refers to an individual who has captured the imagination of many people, some who don't even know the Bible, but many are ignorant about this person called the Antichrist, except they have learned from movies like The Omen. This is the part I want you to take away today. So if you're taking notes, now's the time. We can begin by understanding that the title Antichrist means, the prefix anti means the opposite of or instead of. So opposite of would mean Jesus, loving, kind, beautiful, magnificent, devil, evil, mean, hateful. No. Try instead of. Antichrist will be loving and kind and powerful and charismatic and beautiful and sensuous and all these things. It's not going to be this, oh, I like Jesus because he's loving and kind, and I don't like the devil because he's mean and hateful. No, that's where you're going to be deceived, because this person's going to look like Christ. He's not going to be the anti-Christ, the opposite Christ. He's going to be instead of Christ. Let me continue to read here. The Antichrist is the opposite Jesus. He is the instead of Jesus. Most people have focused on the idea of the opposite Jesus. This has made them think that the Antichrist will appear as a supremely evil person, that as much as Jesus went around doing good, he will go around doing bad. As much as Jesus' character and personality was beautiful and attractive, the Antichrist character, I just read all that. The emphasis of the idea of the opposite Jesus, we emphasize the opposite Jesus too much. The Antichrist will instead be more of an instead of Jesus. He will look wonderful, be charming, and successful. He will be the ultimate winner and appear as an angel of light. In this sense, the Antichrist will be the satanic Messiah instead of the true Messiah, Jesus Christ. 1 John 2:18, John also spoke of the Antichrist and many Antichrists. There is a spirit of Antichrist, and this spirit of Antichrist will one day find its ultimate fulfillment in the Antichrist, who will lead humanity in the end time rebellion against God. In other words, though the world still waits to see the ultimate revelation of the Antichrist, there are little previews of this man and his mission to come. These are the Antichrist with a little a. Though we commonly call this coming world leader the Antichrist, the Bible gives him many names or titles. He is known as the Little Horn of Daniel 7 and 8, the King of Fierce Countenance in Daniel 8, 23, the Prince that Shall Come in Daniel 9. You notice all these are Daniel. The Willful King in Daniel 11, 36 through 45, and the One Who Comes in His Own Name. Now, this is from John 5, 43, and this is the verse in John. I have come in my Father's name, and you do not receive me. If another comes in his own name, him you will receive. And that's who Israel will receive as their Messiah. Remember that 7-year time period that we've talked about? And that 3.5 years the Antichrist is going to reign? That 3.5 years is the time that that Israel accepts the Antichrist as the Messiah. And then remember, he does the abomination of desolation after 3.5 years. I know this is almost like doing math, isn't it? Everybody looks really intense. It's a lot to get your head around. But when that happens and he desecrates the temple, then you've got 3.5 more years of tribulation. Y'all still with me? Man, y'all don't talk much.
The problem is telling them apart. The problem is telling which is which.
Right. And just like, you know, a cashier that's taking in money all the time, most of them will know the difference between a real bill and a fake bill because they're familiar with it. You want to be familiar enough with Jesus and with God and His plan and His redemptive qualities in this world to not be fooled by somebody who says that they are. In 2 Thessalonians, the son of perdition, the man of sin, the lawless one, that's what it's called in 2 Thessalonians. And the horns, 10 crowns. This is something different about the beast compared to the dragon of Revelation 12:3, who had 7 diadems on his head. The 7 crowns of the dragon expressed his strength and power because 7 is the number associated with strength and completeness. Y'all are starting to get that, aren't you? The 10 crowns of the beast express his rule over a group of 10 nations. Now, this is where you start getting down into the, well, are they talking about Russia? Is it the European Union? Who else could have brought back in? I mean, we've done this since the beginning of time. I go back to commentaries that are really ancient, and when we get down into the 666, you're going to see that there was a commentator back before that time that says that's when it'll be. It'll be 1666, and that's when the end of the world will come because you've got that 1,000 years, and then you've got the 666, which, you know, so it didn't happen. So we can keep looking at all these different things, but I hate to keep reading so much, but this one's so intense, it's hard for me to get what I need to get to you. The figure of the 10 horns also associates this beast with Daniel 7:7, which represents the final world empire of the Antichrist, which the Messiah will ultimately conquer. And in Daniel 7:7, I had to go back and look it up because I'm sure you don't have it memorized. It says, after this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all beasts that, God bless you, that were before it. And it had 10 horns. That's Daniel 7:7. In Daniel's vision, the 10 horns specifically represent 10 kingdoms. That this final world dictator has authority over Daniel 7:24. In John's vision, the 10 crowns and the 10 horns emphasize this idea. I'm going to lose y'all if I keep doing this. I'm trying to get to just the thing. On his head, have we even gotten to that part? And the beast which I saw was like a leopard. This verse 2. Was like a leopard, and his feet were like those of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his throne and great authority. Now, how did that happen? So you've got Satan. We've already identified, and we know that the dragon that was in chapter 12 is Satan. So he's the Godhead, so to speak, of this unholy Trinity. And now he's going to give power to the beast, to the Antichrist. How's that going to happen? Well, who knows? I mean, this person is going to have some type of miraculous power, but you've seen signs and wonders and those types of things all the way through the Bible. Not only from God, but you've seen the same thing. Everything that Moses and Aaron did with the Pharaoh, magicians did too, right? So you see over and over again different places where you've got these two things competing against each other, good and evil, God and Satan. But God is the ultimate purveyor over all of this. Verse 3, and I saw one of his heads as it had been slain, and his fatal wound was healed. And the whole earth was amazed and followed after the beast. Now, he did say fatal wound, right? Fatal means dead. So did he come back? Was he dead and he came back? That's what it says. He was resurrected. Who was the second Godhead in the Holy Trinity? He was resurrected. See the similarities? Everything's a copy. But look. Yeah. But everybody sees this and follows after the beast. So it's most of the world is going to say, well, this obviously is the Messiah because he was dead, he's been raised back up, and there you have it. Verse 4, and they worshiped the dragon because he gave his authority to the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast and who is able to wage war with him? And there was given to him a mouth speaking arrogant words and blasphemies, and authority to act for 42 months was given to him. Hey, Lucy, can I get that water from you, sweetheart? For some reason, my mouth is just super dry. Thank you. And so he's talking blasphemies against God. And the seven heads of the beast each advertise blasphemy against God. This speaks of more than the beast's message. It speaks of his character. He is a blasphemer who speaks against God. Refers back to Daniel again. We talked about the leopard. And I'll try to skip through some of this. Verse 6, and he opened his mouth, blasphemes against God, and blasphemed his name and his tabernacle, that is, those who dwell in heaven. So he's not just blaspheming God, he's blaspheming the tabernacle in heaven and all those who dwell in heaven. A lot of commentators will say this is the reference to the raptured church, taken out before the rapture, before the tribulation begins, before all of the turbulence. Whether you believe in the rapture or not, this could be. We've already seen that in the first couple of chapters, we had the 24 saints that stand before the throne. So those are people that have already died and gone on to heaven. So we know there are people in heaven already at this particular time that are up there. And these are just people that the beast can't get. Because the whole idea is, I know I'm going down. I know we're not going to make it. We can fight against God. But they're going to take as many people with them as they can. So, questions, comments? And it was given to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them, and authority over every tribe and people and tongue and nation was given to him. Well, doggone. Who authorized that? Well, you put in a PO and say, we want to take everybody down, and God says, yeah, go ahead. He was given authority to do all that. Just like Job, just like God gave authority for the devil to come and tempt Job and to cause all these hardships to Job up to a point. And you can't go any farther than this. You're on a leash. You can do all these great things, but up to a point with Job. He's going to do the same thing with the people of God, up to a point. Now, many are going to lose their lives. So those are the ones who are actually saved, if you remember from last week's study. Those who had their testimony and were not afraid to die for Jesus. And if you think, as we discussed last week, that you're not afraid to die for Jesus, then why the heck aren't you living for him now? Because living for him is pretty hard. Because if you just have to die, it's over with kind of quick. But if you have to live for Jesus, that means a lot of persecution, that means a lot of things that could go wrong, and we're going to see a lot of those things happen right now.
Another question.
Yep.
Why are they? Does he still look like a beast?
Hmm?
Does he still look like a beast? I'm trying to understand why they're worshiping
like a dragon.
Well, it's because you lived in Japan, and there's all kinds of, you know, crazy, you got your shishas all over the place, and you got your dragons, and you got, and they believe there's the evil spirits and the good spirits. The one shisha says, not closed, he's holding on to good spirits.
Something like that.
And the open eyes, she's just collecting all the evil spirits, and anyway, all that stuff. So I saw all this stuff, and I'm like, why would I be worshiping them, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well,
interesting to have a conversation about, but I don't know that I'd be worshiping a big old dragon with a bunch of heads. I mean, it kind of looks like one of those cartoons that kids watch.
Right. And one of the reasons I didn't put up... I didn't put up all the images is because, remember you asked last week, oh, I really like visuals. Well, I'm a very visual person too. And so I started looking at it and thinking, oh, maybe I need to kind of bring them in to show these different representations down through.
Narnia stuff going on in my head right now.
Yeah, but what happens is we get so caught up with that. I think what John is seeing is obviously a representation. When we talk about the woman was actually Israel. So we learned from the stars and the moon and all that kind of stuff. We learn all this, but it was representative of Israel. It wasn't an actual woman. It was a representation. The same thing with the beast. This is indicative of his character. Mm-hmm. The same thing with the other beast. And it's all representational. There are not 10 literal horns. The horns mean strength. The crowns mean dominance or power over whatever. He's trying to show you that you may be seeing sunshine and light and flowers and all this, but what's really behind all this is this dragon with the horns and the kingdoms. And
I got the Ice Princess scenario going on there. I mean, she was really sweet when she gave them candy with your tribe. Until it...
So, having an envision where dragon was, the dragon's not real and the dragon's not a thing. It's like we had to get all of our envision from the dragon from here. So all those things were made because people got what a dragon looks like from this book when dragons don't even exist. So it's bizarre.
I was kind of wondering if these crowns and diadems were kind of like an attraction to riches. And that's why people might be worshiping.
I think what the crowns symbolize, just as they would in a kingdom, that it's that ultimate power. It's that top. The reason that the beast has 10 is because it's a system of government. It's showing that he has ruling over these 10. The beast is going to use, this is where it's going to get kind of complicated. Let me continue on and I'll get to that part.
I was just going to add real quick that the way I always kind of saw it was that they had an illusion, so they've got this illusion over people. The people don't see them like that, but John's the one that can really see what they really look like.
Very, very good. Very good. So they worshiped the dragon who gave authority to the beast, and they worshiped the beast. So we know that, let's see, as people worship the beast and bow down before his government, it may be that they do not know they are bowing down to Satan himself. But it is worship of Satan nonetheless. They clearly worship both the beast and the dragon, but their worship of the dragon may be unknowing. Though Satan worship becomes more and more popular each year, it is still only a tiny fraction of the people who openly worship Satan. But this is because more people expect Satan to appear as ugliness and horror. This is wrong, for Satan himself transforms himself. This is in 2 Corinthians. Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers also transform themselves into ministers of righteousness, whose end will be according to their works. Now, who is the beast? Who is able to make war against him? The world will be amazed at the power of the beast. It will believe he is so mighty that he cannot be conquered. For a time, the beast will look like a tremendous winner. When he blasphemes Jesus and persecutes God's people, they will appear to be complete losers for a short time. They worship the beast and the dragon behind the beast simply because the beast's might. He's going to go with brute force. All who dwell on the earth will worship him. The final world dictator will demand and receive worship from the whole earth. But those who worship him pay the price. They are whose names have not been written in the book of life. Now we think, how could one man get so much power? Now just look at the 20th century. Mussolini, Stalin, Mao Zedong, you know, Chinese, Russia. If you go into China, you see the leader. If you go into North Korea right now, you see the leader, and it's a complete devotion. And if it's not a complete devotion, you're out of here. You're gone. And so that's what the Bible is telling us, is that will happen, but it will be a complete world system. It won't just be one country that we've seen little things of. And it's hard to, when you get into that, to, if I say the Third Reich of Germany in the 1930s and 40s, you automatically think of Hitler. Why? Because he was the leader, but he was the government. There was this whole governmental system around it, but he was the government. I mean, when he fell, the government fell. When he was gone, the government was gone. So there's that ultimate power. You remember back, where were we when we studied this? Maybe, well, we were at the first of Revelation. Where he was talking to the churches, and you remember there was a church that they were talking about emperor worship. Well, there will be a form of emperor worship during these last days. And what's going to happen is, just like they had in Rome, the Jews had to go to the to city hall, and all you had to do was just take a little pinch of incense, throw it on the fire. You remember that part? Smoke goes up. Guy goes, here's your certificate. You walk. You pay $25 or whatever, and you walk out the door. And there was a big debate between the Christians as, well, I'm not really worshiping, you know, Caesar is Lord, because that's what you had to say. Threw the incense in, Caesar is Lord, get your certificate and walk out. When you got that certificate, you can own a house, you can have a job, you can buy groceries, you can do all the things normal people can do. If you don't throw that pinch of incense, even though you don't believe that Caesar is Lord, if you don't throw that in, pay your $25, you can't go to the grocery store. You can't buy food for your family. You can't live in a house. Anybody can come into your house and take all your possessions because you're an enemy of the state. So, and there was the big debate was, well, I know that Caesar isn't Lord. Can't I just throw that in there, pay my $25 and just get along? And what does the Bible tell us about this? But those who worship him pay the price. They are those, they are whose names have not been written in the book of life. So if you're going to pay homage to the beast, if you're going to worship the beast, then you're not one of God's. That's pretty rough. The book of life contains the names of all God's redeemed. That's in Revelation 20, verse 15. The idea is that the worship of the beast and having your name in the book of life are mutually exclusive. The lamb slain from the foundation of the earth, this deeply meaningful title for Jesus reminds us that God's plan of redemption was set in place before he even created the beings who would be redeemed. God wasn't surprised by the fall of Adam or any other evidence of the fallen nature of man. God isn't making it up as he goes along. It's all going according to his plan. Let me go back to, let's see, where do we stop? Maybe 7. And it was given to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them, and authority over every tribe and people and tongue and nation was given to him. And all who dwell on earth will worship him, everyone whose name is not has not been written from the foundation of the world in the book of life of the Lamb who has been slain. If anyone has an ear to hear, let him hear. Same thing he said to all the churches, the 7 churches in the beginning. Anyone who has an ear to hear, let him hear. So he's reinforcing this. If anyone is destined for captivity, to captivity he goes. If anyone kills with the sword he must be killed. Here is the perseverance and the faith of the saints. So he's saying, if you are worshiping the beast and you're part of this system, and you're taking people captive and you're killing people with the sword or whatever, you'll be held accountable for that. Guys, I'm going to stop because we're just like 5 minutes away. So, y'all have any questions or comments about what we've covered so far?
Where are you stopping?
Stopping at 11, verse 11.
I think Philip would like about all those who live on the earth will worship him, everyone whose name is not written from the foundation of the world in the book.
You go kill people.
Anybody who's destined for captivity or destined. So Philip, he would enjoy being here today, I think.
I'm sure we would have gotten some.
Is Christ sitting up there watching all this happen? Is our God and our side sitting up there just watching all this destruction happen?
Our side, I like that. Hey, there's a lady that's confident in her salvation, and I like that.
Amen.
Amen.
Praise it, sister.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got two ways of thinking, and I'm learning this as you guys are learning it. I'm kind of going along, and my opinions change. But one of the real striking things is God didn't say, okay, we're going to create the world, and then Adam and Eve fell from grace. And God goes, oh, man, didn't see that coming. What am I going to do now? God didn't work that way. That's how we think of it. God went, oh, we have messed up. I've got to come up with something. Okay, let's say animal sacrifice. Let's do that. And then he kind of threw that all together, and he thought, okay, now how are we going to play this out? Okay, Jesus, we're going to send you down, and you'll be that ultimate sacrifice for everybody. He wasn't making this up as he goes along. This end isn't being made up as it goes along. It's already happened. God lives in the beginning of time. God lives all through time. All of this has already happened. I just love the fact that God would pick up a prophet like John and say, you live in this time. And he drags him through space and time and lets him see a vision of things he can't understand. And then, like a mere mortal, like me trying to write a short story, or Lisa can actually write one and I can't, I would come back and try to describe what I saw. And I would describe dragons and with 7 heads and 10 horns. And then all of a sudden, God brings him right back down to where he was before in time. And he writes this down, and now we're trying to figure out what God is telling us. But all this has happened in God's time, not in our time. You understand? That's kind of a Narnia thing. Yeah, I don't understand either.
I see robot transformers.
There you go. Okay, that's telling right there.
I think God wants to commune with us, and the only way he can ever be where he can commune with his with the people who believe in him is to have lived all this stuff out, to show us that, look, you got to struggle with this before you can sort of be sort of like heated down and vetted so that I can commune with you. I mean, we couldn't just be created and do it. We had to see all this, we had to go through all this to come out and be able to commune with God, or to be part of this. I didn't see that before.
You didn't see that before?
Not before a few years ago. I was always wondering, why is God doing all this? Why did he make these die? Why did he... Why? There's just so many questions of why would he be so, you know, so hurtful to us. But I kind of understand that.
We're learning, aren't we, as we go along? I like that.
Well, it's like growing up. I mean, mm-hmm. The little verse I was reading this morning from the day group we're doing is, you know, being like a child. You know, and that was my prayer, was let me try to just have faith like a child more often, because my adult brain goes blah 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 blah, and I want to understand all the little details and I want to figure it out. But I was just telling the fifth graders on Wednesday that the coolest thing I learned a long time ago was that God is just other than. There's this understanding that my human brain is probably never going to really comprehend.
Right. Right.
And but I think as we grow older, you know, it's the same thing as like being a parent and your kids. You know nothing because you're their mom. You know nothing. Even though you've lived at least 30 years, the last 4.5, you still know nothing. They know everything and you know nothing. And I'm just, God, I'm just still that way up to this time.
God, it must feel like that all the time. And he's still telling you to pick up your clothes off the floor, okay?
Just be nice.
Anybody else?
If you're killed by the sword, as it said, mm-hmm. you will be killed by the sword. Mm-hmm. Well, whoever kills you is breaking a commandment. Thou shalt not kill.
Mm-hmm. We're not.
I don't understand that. Mm-hmm. Well, the actual... Who's going to be killing the guy that did the killing?
The actual word. I knew you were going there.
Yeah, the
Go
actual
ahead.
Word is thou shalt not murder. It's mm-hmm. not kill. So, you know, if it's self-defense, if it's, you know, wartime, things like that, but, you know, those things are still within God's will, within his plan, that, you know, the actual translation is thou shalt not murder, which there is a difference.
And we
can murder, you can still get forgiven.
And we talked about that extensively way back when we did Genesis and the Ten Commandments. We talked about all those Ten Commandments in multiple details. We're going to do all this again when we get finished with this and just kind of start back in Genesis and try one more time. We've got a few more years just in the New Testament, yeah. Anybody else? Thank y'all.
Thank you.